a huge focus to kind of improve our waste diversion and recycle better on property. Another huge focus for kind of our core hotels is plastic reduction. And over the past few years, we've been basically eliminating one or two items a year from our operations. So we started with kind of straws, and we've removed plastic cups, plastic water bottles, and we're working on to-go containers and everything. But single-use plastics is just as every kind of area around the property, around every kind of hotel operation. So of course, Chief Sustainability Officer actually announced this year that all properties worldwide are committing to eliminating all guest-facing single-use plastic by the end of this year, which is huge, very, very exciting. So there's a massive list of items that we're either phasing out or finding a kind of compostable or non-plastic or reusable kind of alternative to. And like I said, that will all be implemented by the end of this year. Here at JPL, we have already eliminated about 57.5% of that list. So we are well on our way to achieving the 100% of what a Coors mandated list of items is. But then we've already kind of committed here on property to take it that much further, and we're going to identify other items that we can eliminate or phase out. So that's gonna be a huge piece, very, very exciting to eliminate all that plastic, as we should. Another big piece is our utility reduction programs. So we're always trying to reduce the amount of energy and water that we use here on property, being the largest business in Jasper. So we've actually retrofitted all of our lights on property to be energy efficient bulbs, mostly LED, but we do have some kind of other fluorescent and other kinds of light fixtures on property that are not necessarily LED, but they are energy efficient. And then over the last 2 years, we renovated 300 Fairmont bathrooms across the property. And during those renovations, we actually retrofitted all of those new bathrooms with certified low flow plumbing fixtures. So all the toilets, sinks, and shower heads are all certified low flow. Huge impact over time to reduce our water consumption. And then again, more awareness campaigns. I've kicked off the Power Down campaign to really raise awareness in our back of house areas or staff areas to reduce energy consumption. And then also the Preserve Our Glacier Water campaign, which encourages people just to turn off the taps, take shorter showers, all those little pieces that have a huge cumulative impact over time. And then, so let's talk about some of our fun engagement initiatives as well. So we host annual property cleanups every year. And actually just this past weekend, we hosted a lake cleanup. So at the lake cleanup, we had four divers from the Dive Outfitters that came into the lake and they cleaned the bottom of the lake. Really, really exciting. And we had kind of volunteers supporting them with canoes so that they could get the garbage to shore. And we found all sorts of crazy different items that had somehow, I don't know how, somehow ended up in this lake. Lots of glassware, kind of antique plates all the way back from the Canadian National Railways days. So very interesting items, sunglasses, selfie sticks. And then there was even an entire windshield wiper from a vehicle. I don't know how that got to the middle of the lake, the entire arm and everything. So that was very interesting. And then, of course, we host the property cleanup. So we had a really great turnout this year. We had 53 participants, and we collected, I think, 236 pounds of garbage across the entire 700-acre property. Really great to see from an event perspective. Like, I love that we cleaned up all that trash. Sad to see that there was that much to begin with. And I think that really ties back into the kind of single-use plastic reduction. Just with the sheer amount of visitors and tourists that come here, it's just bound to happen. But if we can really make a huge effort on our part to eliminate that plastic, hopefully that will translate to a reduction in litter on the property. And then a new program that we kicked off was the Fire Smart Safe Neighborhood Program. So this ties into kind of one of our big capital projects that we've had over the last 4 years, where we have hired contractors to remove all of the dead trees on the outskirts of our property that were affected by the mountain pine beetle infestation. And all of those dead trees posed a huge wildfire threat for the property and for Jasper as a whole. So eliminating that, getting rid of all of that fuel in the forest and returning it to more of a natural state was really important. And the town also had a bunch of fire smart initiatives as well. But this Fire Smart Safe Neighborhood program is more of like the volunteer kind of immediate area around the buildings component of this program. And basically we have had volunteers remove fire hazards. So we've been pruning trees, removing weeds, cutting the grass, moving unnecessary items, everything that we can in that kind of 20 to 30 meter zone around our staff housing buildings to reduce that fire risk is super crucial. And just this summer, we wrapped up the third of our three staff communities. So we're hoping that all three of them will be certified by FireSmart Canada by the end of this year. And we'll actually be the first kind of private corporate communities ever to be recognized by this program in Canada and possibly even all of North America. So super exciting. Again, trying to set that precedent. Always trying to kind of keep the rest of the hotel industry on their toes and playing catch up with us. So really proud of that program. Glad that it's turned out so well. And then, of course, we do a lot of different donations and community investment. So I've had a lot of really odd side projects to recycle and donate and get rid of different items that have just accumulated over, I would say, upwards of 30 years here on property. Some of them include 11 different abandoned vehicles. Don't ask me how people are abandoning vehicles at a luxury hotel. I don't know. But we've had 11 abandoned vehicles. So I managed to find a recycling partner to take it and strip all of the metal and different components of the vehicles so that they didn't have to go to the landfill. We also partnered with Goodwill Edmonton, and they send out a truck every year, and we've cleaned out all these old storerooms and kind of forgotten areas of property and cleaned out over 10,000 pounds of old furniture that used to be used in the rooms and around the hotel, and light fixtures and all sorts of different items that they've been able to repurpose and sell at their stores. And then also we just had some recent donations to the Ukraine Society of Edmonton, who came out and picked some furniture up to support some of the refugee families fleeing the conflict in Europe. And then, of course, every year we have an annual canned food drive. And then we actually collected jackets for Jasper Community Outreach Services. And then we donated some. We donated $500 to the Jasper Victims Services. So we're always trying to support our community wherever we can. And it's really great to be a part of all these like really positive initiatives. So I could go on and on and on, but I won't. But I just want to say that, you know, that we are doing a lot of really great things, but it's not just us saying that we're doing a great job. We're really walking the walk. And we proved that by having Green Key Global audit all of our operations to see how well we were implementing sustainability. And they went through everything and they gave us a 5 Green Key rating, which is the highest rating that you can receive through their audit. And we've actually renewed that for 5 year consecutive years in a row now. So really great to see that we have that kind of third party certification to you know, really verify that we are doing as good of a job as we think we're doing. So I'll just take a quick moment just chat about some of our challenges here on property. So I would say the first and foremost is probably time management, particularly my own. just because my main duty is to manage all the construction on property. So sustainability, although it's like the primary part of my title, is actually kind of secondary part of my position. And so luckily, I'm just like super passionate about this and really make it a priority. But there's so many other pieces in my day-to-day that kind of take up the majority of my time. So I just don't have that kind of full-time dedication to manage all these programs. And then also finding time to get staff out to volunteer. It's a busy operation. The hotel industry has been very short-staffed. So finding volunteers has been challenging, and there's always changing priorities. So that's been a huge challenge for us. Another piece I would say is just like budgets and kind of navigating such a large organization. You know, I don't officially have any sustainability budgets, but I have to kind of like negotiate it and just like prove like a business case every time that we need something. The hotel's been really great. The leadership is all on board. They support it, but it's just you know, an additional step that I always have to take to secure funds. Communication is really challenging. It kind of ties into getting volunteers out. We don't really have like a centralized platform for communication here, so it's a mix of like Facebook and then posting on Instagram and sending out emails, and then but not everyone checks those things, so you have to get some posters out, et cetera, et cetera. And then just communicating with marketing to promote all the great things that we're doing. You know, that's a huge component of promoting sustainability and getting engagement, but it's very challenging, again, when you don't have a whole lot of time on your hands. So another piece is getting people at the hotel to prioritize sustainability. Everyone's been working at 110% for months now, and it's only going to get busier as we move into July, August, September. And so getting people to always, you know, take an extra minute and make sure that they're properly disposing of an item, getting the servers to, you know, properly clear the food waste into the compost stream rather than just into the garbage. All those little pieces, it's a constant fight, just getting people to really embed that culture of sustainability into their day-to-day tasks is a very challenging piece, and I could talk all day about that. But we're slowly but surely, you know, creating that behavior change. And that ties into the next point where we have a lot of seasonal staff. I would say the majority of our staff are seasonal staff. And so there's a very high turnover rate every year. So you work so hard, you get people going, they understand what they're doing, and then they leave in September. And then you have to just do it all again every summer. So a bit exhausting, but very necessary, of course. And then the last piece I would say is, especially being such a large business, we get approached by so many different, I would say like consulting firms and people trying to sell us products and organizations wanting to come to the property or do a tour, or there's so many different partnership opportunities. So just navigating that, finding the right value generating partnerships, and not necessarily from a financial perspective, but what is going to be impactful for the business and for that organization, and then managing those relationships over time is just challenging, because just the sheer amount of people trying to get involved with us is really great to see, but it's also a lot. It's just a lot. So those are some of the challenges, and I think I'll wrap up there. Totally open to questions or whatever, and then feel free to always reach out to me via email, or you can follow me on Instagram at sustainable_Jasper. I post all about the work that I'm doing here at the hotel and in the community as well, and kind of just a great fun way to stay in the know. So with that, I'm done.
Thank you so much, Patrick. It's so great to have you here and to hear about the sustainability initiatives that you've been involved in and how you're supporting your community in a multitude of ways, it seems. So before I introduce our next speaker, does anyone have any questions for Patrick that they would like to ask now? Megan?
I was just wondering, like, I've done some research on some of the different certification agencies, I guess. I don't know if Green Tourism Canada still exists, but I've worked with them in the past. And then also, I've read about Biosphere International. So I was just wondering, what made you choose Green Tea to do your third-party certification? And, I guess just kind of deciding, like, what would be, if we want to start, what would be the most cohesive for both businesses? Because I know Biosphere International, they have a destination certification, which I'm not sure if Green TV does or not. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a really great question. And I'll start by saying that the Green Key certification was in 2018, was the first year that they received it. And I didn't start here until 2020. So that was before my time, wasn't really involved in the decision-making process. But I think it was more of like a regional thing that Green Key does assessments specifically for hotels. So I think they wanted an organization like that to kind of certify their operations. But I would also say that there's just an abundance of certifications in general for all components of sustainability. If you look at like green building certifications, it's absolutely insane. Green tourism, which is just exploding right now, so many different certifications. It's almost like it's impossible to keep up with all of them and try to pursue all of them. Green Key is just who we've been with since 2018, and there's definitely always opportunities to pursue other certifications, definitely in the future. But that's just who we have now. So I hope that answers your question.
Awesome, thank you, Patrick and Megan as well. Robin, do you have a question?
I do, yes. For Megan, I just wanted to say Green Step is another organization that you may want to look into for destination.
They're connected with Green Tourism Canada. Like, is that Angela Nashville, or I thought the two organizations were kind of linked?
You know what, I'm not sure. One of my colleagues works closely with Green Step. I don't have the contacts there myself, but... Alex Hogan,
okay,
yes.
Yeah. Alex and I went to a sustainable tourism conference in Ottawa together a few years ago. So.
Oh, good, yes. Yeah, exactly. So Alex would be a good contact if you wanted to reach out to her and see if she's got some more info there. But for Patrick, I wanted to ask, I know from my personal experience in the hotel industry, sometimes the sustainability piece is a tough sell with ownership, because obviously they want to see a return on investment. And I'm wondering if you have any data or any statistics that you have come up with to show what that return maybe to date would be on any of the investments that you've put into place for sustainability. So for example, a reduction of your energy usage, if you've seen savings there as far as the revenue and what that cost would be.
Mm-hmm. It's a really great question, Robin, and I think it really goes back to, for Jasper Park Lodge specifically, and our other mountain properties. It goes back to kind of all those layers I listed out at the beginning, right? Like, there's just like those additional kind of responsibilities for the environment that the ownership and kind of corporate take into consideration here. And these are Fairmont hotels, so this has been embedded in kind of the culture since the 1990s across multiple owners, as the hotels have transferred ownership. And then Accor Hotels, our corporation, is really pushing forward to be the major hotel group leader in the world for sustainable hospitality. And then our ownership group, we're the four mountain properties, Banff, Lake Louise, Jasper, and Whistler are owned by Oxford Properties. And so Oxford has also been really great and receptive to kind of implementing sustainability programs. I know that not all ownership groups are as receptive. So I think understand, like, yeah, it's an interesting point. Like, if you were to show them the data on the energy reduction over time, of course, like, it's all about proving, like, over time that there will be that kind of return on investment. A small but, you know, critical win that I got was I managed to convince them to buy some bear-proof bins for a new staff composting program that we're kicking off. And they're not cheap with the price of steel, so they were, you know, a pretty significant investment to get these on property. But I showed them the numbers from the transfer station. I said, look, we're being charged by weight for municipal solid waste. Here's how much we're paying annually, but we don't pay to transport food waste to the transfer station. So, you know, you get that return on investment, you know, within a year for the cost of these, you know, bins. So just like looking at the financial data is super crucial. And then, you know, they hire consultants to do kind of energy audits and all sorts of different pieces to look for opportunities to kind of reduce energy consumption and save money on their utilities, because across the four properties it is quite expensive every month. So, you know, we've been really fortunate that we have receptive ownership. I know, especially after the COVID, after the pandemic, a lot of other owners are not in as good a shape to make large financial investments. But I would say any kind of small win is a big win in the bigger picture. So just try and move the meter further and further and get them more excited about it. We'll get, you know, increase their appetite to make larger investments.
Yeah, for sure. Good. Well, it sounds like you've got great support there. So
we do. We're very lucky. So
good. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, everyone. Does anyone else have any questions? All right. And with that, I guess I will introduce our next speaker. If anyone else has any more questions for Patrick, we can always ask them towards the end, or he has his email there on the screen. So feel free to reach out to him afterwards. So our next speaker is Lindsay Gardner, who is a community development coordinator for the municipality of Jasper with a focus on special grant funded projects. Lindsay is a master's student in degrowth, ecology, economics, and policy, and is doing her thesis on the role of policy in supporting and enabling abundant and resilient food systems. And today, Lindsay will be discussing how to mobilize social change. We're very happy to have her here today. So with that, take it away, Lindsay.
Awesome. Great to have everyone here. I'll just start by prefacing that I'm coming from two main perspectives here. So I'm definitely coming as a master's student who's researching economic, ecological and political aspects of social and ecological well-being. So that's definitely one arm that I sit on. And then I'm also coming as a representative of the municipality of Jasper as a community development coordinator. And I work on different grant-funded projects in the similar way where Patrick was saying some of his main roles aren't related to perhaps sustainability. My main role is not related to sustainability or social change or justice, but I find myself in those circles often, and that's definitely where I like to position myself. So I'm excited to just talk about the intersection of my research and school that I'm going in right now, and then also work and things that I've learned navigating policy with as a government employee. So I'm going to share my screen now. Okay, cool. Awesome. So I made this really high-tech PDF document. I just want to get it nice and big. Okay, cool. How's that look for everybody?
Good.
Awesome. Sorry, I want y'all on the side. All right, perfect. So I'm going to talk about the high level of participatory process and kind of multiple different theories that I've been learning about and thinking about in relation to the work that I do. And I'm just going to really broadly go over this, and hopefully it's not confusing. But basically, when we think about organizing and mobilizing social change, you can think about it in three different kind of structures and levels. And so interstitial change, which is really like making small change on a grassroots level, on the bottom-up process, we kind of think about it as making change of cracks in the system, or the metaphor I use is moves in the game. So you're just changing the movements that you make in the game. And there's an entire theory called game theory, if you're interested in this and you want to look it up after, that's where this is coming from. And then that can move and that can mobilize symbiotic change, which is a lot more within the actual democratic processes. So changing and rewriting the rules of the game, which in this little diagram that I have here could result in the green box with actual systemic change. And so I just want to preface by saying this is very much something that I've just been playing with other colleagues in combining and working through a lot of different theories. If you want more information, feel free to reach out to me, but it is by no means A, representing the municipality, or B, a really backed up, well thought out, there's no books yet. But I was excited to share it with everyone today because I think it is useful to think about how we mobilize social change. Two really key parts of this, I think, is education. So looking at how to unify and collaborate with different partners and people involved in the issues at hand, in identifying common goals, and then assessing the strategies needed to reach those goals. And then the second piece is direct democracy. So really enabling democratic and participatory processes that engage citizens in being able to identify those common goals and move towards policy and strategy that can reach those goals. So that's kind of the high level that I just wanted to bring in. And then to get it a little bit more down to the local level, I'm just going to discuss a little bit of what we do in community development. And I'll start by giving a big shout out to Patrick, because it's so awesome to have him there as a citizen and also a business representative, especially for such a huge player like JPL. So we really appreciate that engagement. And I have to say that when you think about enabling and disabling factors, having people like Patrick working in the hotel industry, working within the tourism sector, is so useful. And I often think about mobilizing change as you need people on the inside and the outside, right? And so you need people that are advocating within government, and you also need citizens advocating outside government. You need citizens or employees advocating within a business, and then also maybe the government advocating on the outside, right? So it's kind of the intersection of having both that external and internal, regardless of the sector that you're looking at. So one way in which we have a participatory process that is sometimes a little bit slower than we'd like, obviously, but this is the democratic process, is something called community conversations. So the community conversations are a monthly meetup. I'll talk about the environmental one specifically, where we bring together any stakeholder, resident, citizen, person interested in environmental responsibility in Jasper. And it's very simple. We identify trends. So we identify what are we seeing related to environmental responsibility, and what are the opportunities out of these trends. You can also think of trends as challenges or issues, but we like to kind of, you know, put a little bit of a positive spin on it and think about how we can view these as just something we're seeing that we can act on and find actionable solutions. From here, you can see we've got in blue citizens, organizations, service providers, businesses. These are stakeholders that are coming kind of from the external point of view and meeting with the municipality. And then you have administration, which is facilitating the community conversation and taking that back into the administrative level to see what actionable items can happen as part of like our town's strategic priorities, part of council's strategic priorities. And if administration can act, you can see this arrow down here, mobilization of change, we call these quick wins. So this is something where we can just immediately say, yes, we can start to make this change. It is within our strategic priorities. We don't need to go through council. Other times, administration, through community conversations, so kind of in partnership with community conversations, will present to council. And this happens in a 3-month period. There's a presentation to council that summarizes and presents and reports on what's gone down at community conversations, what are the main key opportunities, and what can be actionable by council. So what kind of decisions can be made by council based on what the group has been working through. Then the other way that you can have that mobilization of change is citizens, or, you know, the blue box there, advocating just totally outside, but gaining the support and the coordination by the community conversation to do so. So I think that's like one piece I find really interesting is council, and council needs to feel justified by citizen support, engagement, and advocacy to make decisions on when it comes to policy. And so there needs to be a citizen push. But when you think about citizens, there's not a lot of time or energy. Everyone works a lot, and it's hard to know how to navigate those systems. So I think that just navigating the democratic process currently can be a barrier. So that's really where you see this synergy of administration, the municipality of Jasper, being able to support, help, and coordinate some of that advocacy. So, and then having like someone like Patrick who shows up is very knowledgeable and is also a part of a great example of what every business could be doing, I think is also really essential because it shows what's possible. And so that's like a massive enabling factor. Especially when, if you address the realities of our tourism economy, the tourism sector generally, and definitely like hotels and restaurants, produce a lot of waste. And so having those people there to talk about what we can be doing as a government, as a municipality, can we be supporting with infrastructure better? Can we be supporting with education and awareness? Is really key. So that is definitely an enabling factor. And then the only other thing I really wanted to talk about were like agents of change, right? Which I think I already touched on. So I don't know, that was pretty quick. Hopefully I didn't speak too fast, but I'll stop sharing here and open it up to questions.
Thank you so much, Lindsay. That was great and so informative. We're always very interested in community buy-in and engagement. So does anyone have any questions for Lindsay?
I have a question for sort of both of you guys, because I think it's really common for everyone in this group to have that, you know, resort or large hotel and then the municipality. So I'm wondering, you know, for Patrick, do you face barriers with the municipality, or are there ways that the municipality could support the work that you're doing? And vice versa for Lindsay, do you see opportunities for powerful players? Like Patrick mentioned, they're the largest employer in a community, and I think most of the communities we have here have sort of that one big resort or a big, you know, tourism venture that if they were doing well, they could help push some things forward and support. So I guess kind of a...
Sure. Yeah, it's a really good question. I would say no, absolutely not. We don't have any barriers from the municipality. I think we are just positioned a little bit uniquely as well. Like there always is that kind of large resort within a town, but like you look at Banff, for example, and Banff Springs is still within the town, whereas Jasper Park Lodge is really kind of like this separate entity. I always refer to it as a separate small town, where we have our own garbage collection, we have our own fire department, our own water treatment plant, powerhouse, everything. We are kind of like our own kind of entity. So we have to kind of self-manage a lot. So we don't really bump heads too much with the municipality, I would say. If anything, I feel like we could collaborate even more to encourage other businesses to kind of be kind of influence them from both ends to say like, hey, you guys need to step up, because I see a lot of opportunities for the other businesses in town to catch up, or, you know, to like really implement a lot of programs, because overall in the industry, I would say like many hotel chains are not doing very much, or they're kind of dabbling in almost like greenwashing, where they say, hey, we did one little sustainability program where we sent 3 volunteers to go clean up a pathway, that's it, and and it completely ignore everything that they're actually doing. So yeah, I think that we could definitely work together more. So
definitely, and I'll just hop in there, not to like bash the muni at all, or to jump on the other side of this, but I do think that when there are barriers, for example, I'm going to bring up composting, less the composting issue in Jasper, but for example, our composting is just not being handled very well, and it's very complicated because it's both Parks Canada and the municipality that are part of actually operating that program. But that in a way could be seen as a barrier, where like a hotel or a resident is not able to properly compost because the infrastructure is not there or being operated properly by the government, both the municipal and the federal government. And then this is kind of, you think of my diagram, where having someone like Patrick and having multiple other community stakeholders and organization representatives come to the community conversation, formally advocating and asking questions, enables administration to push that forward to council. So to speak to that collaborative point of view, like there's always more room for collaboration. And I think the more you can get these stakeholders into a common place and identify what goals are we trying to reach, that really helps push the political will or the administrative will to make those things kind of happen. So
yeah, and I think it's pretty cool, Lindsay, that since we've had the environmental conversations just since January, we've put forward over 40 different strategic recommendations to municipal council to act on, and they range in importance from like a small little piece to like a huge capital investment, and then they can really take that information and go. And I just want to kind of follow up about some of the barriers, I would say, because you were talking about just navigating the kind of a municipal bureaucracy is a barrier. And we heard that firsthand from the Jasper Local Food Society at our local recent food conversation. And, you know, these are really passionate, hardworking people. They volunteer like crazy, but they're just really apathetic towards government institutions. And if they were just able to kind of navigate that bureaucracy and put forward formal recommendations and go to city council, they might have more of an impact than just giving up. But it you know, I also study politics as a background, so navigating kind of like administrative bureaucracy is just like one of my pastimes, so it doesn't bother me at all. But I know that for the ordinary person, like to look at a large institution like a municipality, and even on a larger scale, like you look at the city of Calgary and trying to navigate through that, forget it. It's like, it's a huge challenge, and it's not easy, and it takes so much time. So yeah, it's a huge barrier for sure.
Do you think there's an opportunity for, you know, the business to do that? Because, you know, a business has a lot of potentially more power or more voice to do that, you know. And so for Fairmont to push something, or Jasper Park Lodge just in itself as well, to push something forward for the municipality?
Absolutely, but you just need people who are passionate enough to lead that when people are bogged down in their duties. And I feel like every year there's more duties that are just being layered on top of people's jobs, so it's just getting more and more challenging to kind of multitask everything.
Yeah.
But you just need people who are going to like prioritize it and make it a point. So.
And then on the flip side of that, just to kind of speak to Robin's question, which I think was quite interesting, like looking at the return on investment, I think often what isn't discussed enough, and I think this actually needs to come from the public realm, like it needs to come from the government is what about the cost on the environment of economic activity, right? And so we're always thinking in terms of profit, or we're thinking in terms of the return on investment from a business perspective, and that's how businesses function, so that makes sense. But then I think that's where it does come down to perhaps the residents, citizens advocating to the government to say, we also really want to be calculating and accounting for the cost on the environment to incentivize or really regulate that businesses do need to make these sustainable choices and embed that in their value system, despite there not being a return on investment. Because you see, like JPL, it's a dream situation where they just do that themselves. But knowing that other businesses may not, there has to be, I think, that external pressure or incentivization.
Actually, a good, just a final note on that too, is even today the federal government announced some of their plans to phase out single-use plastics and start banning them. And they really like went in detail about what they're outlining. And I thought that really speaks to what Lindsay was just saying. It's like, there's a pretty good motivating factor right there. It's if you don't voluntarily do it and stay ahead of the game, eventually, you know, it is slow, but the policy will catch up and then businesses will be reacting rather than being proactive. So, you know, I think it's always really important for businesses to just do it. Why not? Like, why not, you know, use that as your selling point, as more and more consumers take that as like a really important factor of when choosing where they're going to stay or where they're going to shop. Why not just like use that and embrace it and lead the way, and rather than being told by the government, now you can't use any of your plastics anymore, figure it out. Yeah. Where would you rather be?
Does anyone else have any questions?
Pop some stuff in the chat. Yeah, I just was wondering, like, in Jasper, so now in Ontario, we have a municipal accommodation tax here on the person, so we're just implementing it this year. So, you know, we'll see what happens in terms of our local chamber of commerce, but it looks like we'll be getting that money. Well, it's split between the municipality and them. So, because previously, I would say staff capacity on the municipal side, but also on the tourism organization side, has really been a challenge. Like, we now have a sustainable tourism advisory group that meets monthly, but then those are all just mostly government entities, or everyone has their own mandate, so you can't really tell each other what to do. So it would be nice to have an organization that has money and some power in this, like, among tourism operators. And my dream is that they can maybe lead this destination certification process. So I'm not sure if you have an organization like that that has its own funding, sustainable funding sources, to help with that or not.
I don't think so, Lindsay. Do you know of anything?
No, but it does make me think of one initiative we've talked about at the environmental community conversation, is how to like establish a certification, or like basically market and advertise businesses that are doing sustainable things, that are making those actions proactively. And how that could be municipally supported, and maybe an award through our Chamber of Commerce, or some free marketing or advertising. So that is one thing we've discussed. Obviously, like, there's not a lot of cost to that, because it's really just trying to, celebrate those businesses and hope that drives more traffic to them.
Just public recognition, even like in the newspaper and stuff like that, I think can go a long way. We haven't fully done that, but it's been talked about. I just posted the Thompson Okanagan Tourism Association. I remember, yeah, me and Alex saw them present in Ottawa a few years ago, and they seem to be really killing it on, you know, tourism, like sustainable tourism governance and funding, and quite a sophisticated organization.
Great, Thank you, everyone. Does anyone have any last minute questions? I actually do. I do have a question for Lindsay, if that's okay, just because I'm super interested in community engagements. So in terms of the community conversations that you've been talking about, how do you make those accessible to all community members? And do you find that a diverse group of people show up and have their voices heard? And what kind of platforms do you use to ensure that all community members are showing up or having the opportunity to show up?
That's a great question, because it's definitely a challenge we've experienced, I think, from an administrative point of view. Previously, obviously, these conversations were on Zoom. And for context, like Patrick mentioned, the environmental conversation started in January. For many, many years, we had life stage focused conversations, which were just looking at like senior citizens, adults, kind of teenagers and youth, and then early childhood. And we really felt and heard a need for other topics, other areas of interest. And we started on Zoom, which had quite a good engagement, but we're looking at people who are already kind of in the know, right? Who are already engaged, who already really care. And so we've done quite a bit of advertising on social media and like posters. That being said, I wouldn't say our communication as an organization is top of the line. I think there could be lots of improvement in engaging more people. And then one factor that has definitely been a barrier is the time. The conversation happens 2 to 3:30 on a Wednesday afternoon. So you're really limiting who can show up to that. So either people, I would say, you're having people come that have the professional capacity to incorporate it into their workday. So you're missing out on a whole sector of people who can't leave work and may have very like insightful and ground level either ideas or capacity to mobilize those ideas. I would love to see so many more people from the restaurant industry. I would love to see like servers, housekeepers. Like, how can we start to like embed some of this change right on the ground level through the people actually doing the work, and how can they go and advocate to their management, to their HR? So we have discussed trying to switch it into an evening, which I think would work a lot better. The other piece that I personally would love to see, and this initiative is not managed by me, so I'm kind of just like on the side of it, but I think that it would be fantastic if, alongside having the formal meeting style, like format, we could also incorporate the action that we're talking about through the group. So if we had our environmental community conversation was like walking around town and picking up garbage, or if it even was just like in a park, in a green space that we really enjoy being around. So yeah, I think that those are ways we can engage more people and get a diversity of people too, because with burnout, I think sometimes the last thing someone wants to do is sit on a Zoom call or go to a meeting when they've already done that all day long, or they've just worked a really long session, or sorry, shift. So what would it look like to have it be in itself a reprieve and a really like actionable, mobilizing kind of meetup?
Yeah, or even that could be a partnership with a resort like JPL, is either, you know, JPL mobilizing those volunteers who are already engaged, or vice versa, you know, the municipality attending that event and speaking to people on the ground while they're participating in an event that JPL is, you know, organized and is participating in, and those staff have time off to do that, or whatever's going on there, you know.
Exactly, and the one thing I will add is the community conversations is purposely set up not to be a committee where you have to like be voted onto the board and sit on the board and go to every single meeting. We want it to stay accessible. That being said, having a smaller group of really engaged, dedicated people is useful in actually moving things forward, especially when you only have an hour and a half to meet every month. So I think like what Nat's talking about there is the capacity for that core group to be like splitting off and doing more mobilization outside of like the central kind of conversation.
Great, thank you so much. And does anyone have any last minute questions for either Patrick or Lindsay, as we're out of time? today. But like I said, if you have any last minute questions for them, please feel free to either email me or them after this call, and we'll get back to you as soon as possible. And I'd just really like to thank our two speakers, Patrick and Lindsay, for coming out today and sharing your insights and your knowledge. We do appreciate it so much, and I can tell that this call was very useful. I'll be sending everyone an email at some point this week with the call recording as well as the slides used today. And Climate Caucus is also asking anyone to share any climate initiatives, sustainability, or energy plans you know of for small and rural communities. So all I need is the name of the project or plan or a link to it. And once we have these compiled, we will be sharing them with the larger group. So please feel free to email me with any questions or information you have at kira@climatecaucus.ca. And thank you so much for everyone who joined today. This is our last meeting before the summer, so I hope everyone has a safe and happy summer. And thank you so much, everyone, for coming out today.
Thanks for having us. It was great.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
This was awesome.
Bye-bye.
I just popped the link to our climate plan that we just finished in the chat there.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yep. Take care.
Bye.
So, sorry about the beeping sound on that recording, because I was upstairs listening to the January 6th hearings, and my computer cord, or the sync cord that I have for my phone, that was plugging in, getting some power, somehow it can't upload videos anymore or pictures, so it just has this error beeping all the time, and I have to continuously click close, but then it just reopens again because it's plugged into the USB port instead of the wall. So how embarrassing is it when we have these like glitched out things and not noticing right away? So that's probably the worst recording maybe to date because of the beeping, so please forgive me. This is Sarah Fowler. I'm recording at the Green Antler in Tassis, Nooka Sound, British Columbia, Canada, and the weather today, it's June 21st, Indigenous People's Day, and it's raining. My cucumbers are on the front porch looking sad because it's quite kind of chilly, but it was nice and sunny yesterday, and so today with the rain I moved the cactuses in but left the cucumbers out, and we'll see how that goes with respect to this summer's growing season. I really like the climate plans that they popped into the chat during this meeting, because one is the Biosphere Climate Action Hub, and the other is the Thompson Okanagan Tourism Association. So both of those are ways where we can have this sort of intersection between, you know, place and responsibility. And I know that in the time that I've spent living in this property, we are really, you know, affected by the sense of place and growing things and planting, you know, gardens. And that's something that is always going to be kind of at the utmost focus for me, and I see how resorts and farms, you know, is an experience, you know, farming in remote places, or even just like food production and harvest and preparation. So, yeah. Thank you so much to all the Waterfowl Podcast listeners. This has been a really strange journey to record these webinars that I go to for my first term of municipal office, and also just to see how important it is to do those kind of public engagements like they were talking at the end, where it was like not about having these Zoom meetings at, you know, 2 for like the staff people to go to, but in fact for like centering it around maybe someone else who is, you know, working in service, like they were talking about, for me, you know, it's reminiscent. We went to this reading ceremony yesterday at the school, and to, you know, eat together and to have gifts and some kind of ceremony where we make our priorities known. I feel like that's pretty important to read off this website for the Thompson Okanagan Tourism Association. It says, join the Biosphere Commitment Program. That seems supports tourism industry stakeholders to take action towards environmental, social, economic dimensions of sustainability. That is really making me think about the work that I'm doing this weekend with the Nootka Marine Adventures and signing people up for Nootka Sound Watershed Society memberships at the Derby, and having that kind of stewardship and sustainability built into the enjoyment of the natural asset. So it's really exciting to do the Derby and to live the life and to, you know, understand. It was really fun to take the kids to the beach scene and to see how excited they got when we pulled up the net and we had the perch and we had the salmon and we had the crabs and other sort of creatures that they had maybe not seen before because that was their first beach scene. So the habitat education component and the recruitment of, you know, people to carry this knowledge forward and to be involved in that sort of citizen science and commerce, right? You know, that's what this website is, the Tourism Association, right? So there is a tourism resiliency program that I've heard of and provides long-term support, navigate the impacts of COVID-19 pandemic, adapt service, and work towards eventual recovery. So that's pretty excellent. With the Biosphere Climate Action Hub, that's from the Bruce Peninsula Biosphere Association. Climate Action Hub aims to reduce and aims to educate and encourage people like you to take on climate action in your own hands. Climate change is a threat to lands and water that we live, work, and depend on. Engaging in direct climate action by lowering personal greenhouse gases not only mitigates your contribution to climate change, further normalizes climate-conscious lifestyles, producing ripple effects and far-reaching impacts. What can grassroots action do for global climate change challenge? And if saving the planet isn't enough, it's important to know that lowering your emission often leads to added benefit of lower monthly energy bills and fuel costs. So with that, that's my next thing that I'm going to have another recording for today is the, what's next in my calendar? We were just listening to Outdoor Rec. Let's see. Okay. Go. Outdoor Rec Communities partnering with resorts on sustainability. And next up we have the Consider a Heat Pump free webinar. So happy National Indigenous Peoples Day. This episode will come out next year in season 3, but it is being recorded just as we're inching into the summer of 2022. So thanks again for listening, and you can listen to our next episode, which will be about considering a heat pump. And this one was about outdoor recreation communities partnering with resorts. Have a nice day. Thanks for listening. This is Sarah. You're listening to Green Antlers Waterfowl Podcast.